Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, episode for Friday, March 16th. This is your boy Matt Shook, an Associated Press writer here in Chicago, covering the NBA and sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Been following these Pistons my whole life, and another defensive listless effort out west for the Pistons. And today we're going to be talking about that loss on Thursday to the Denver Nuggets. They're all been pretty inspired last quarter and a half for the Pistons, I guess, if you want to look at a little bit of the bright side there. I got a little bit more Blake Griffin complaining to do as well. And also we're going to be talking to Aaron Johnson of the website Palace of Pistons, a high schooler, a senior who is running the website there, and talk to him about some of the interesting things that they are doing, in addition to talking about his De La Salle Pilots, who are alive in the State Boys Basketball High School Tournament as well. He does some of the broadcasting for that group. But the Pistons lost 120 to 113 to the Denver Nuggets out in the Mile High City. They covered the spread, though. How about that for the Pistons, covering the 7.5-point spread? Nikola Jokic had his 8th triple-double of the season, 23 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists. It is pleasurable to watch him play ball, especially getting the ball movement for the Denver Nuggets there. Nice to see if you're a Denver fan. Not so nice to see what could have been and the types of players that the Pistons should maybe be looking at in this modern NBA. But the Pistons trailed by 26 points in the third quarter. But like I said, this time they showed a lot of pride and battled back, unlike maybe the Utah game the other night. Brought the lead down to 5, but then they bring Blake Griffin back in, and then pretty much he contributes nothing the last 5 minutes, and the Pistons can't close the deal despite a valiant effort by Dwight Bikes in the fourth quarter and end of the third quarter as well. Like I said, listless effort and horrible defense early on were the story for the Pistons. 21 points and 17 rebounds for Andre Drummond, who battled throughout, but the shortcomings when they needed a free throw, they needed some baskets that he was right near the rim on throughout, just didn't make it happen. Blake Griffin, an empty 26 points and 9 assists as well. Reggie Bullock, back from the car accident, had 17 points in his return, but got beat by Will Barton a couple times, his defensive assignment, when the Pistons got the lead back down to 5 and 7. And when they needed a stop, Bullock wasn't able to help them out with that. And like I said, Blake Griffin, the defense is still really bad for him there. A non-factor at best, a negative factor on his worst defensive possessions, but also offensively when he's on the court. And part of this is on Stan Van Gundy as well, but part of the problem with Blake offensively is the type of action that he runs, or that the Pistons runs around him. It's ISO stuff, and it's also two-man game for the most part. And yes, they do result in buckets sometimes, like I said, 26 points, some solid stats over the past few weeks. And not all of his games offensively have been bad lately. They've been mostly good but they're always high effort buckets with Blake Griffin, and they're always the kind of baskets that don't require a defense to tax themselves. Now, the one guy who's guarding Blake Griffin or who's involved in the two-man game with him and Bullock, they get back down and beat. Or Reggie Bullock, kind of slips through for an open jumper off of a screen and roll. But I think if that's your entire offense that you're basing it on, it's ultimately not going to be winning offense. It's ultimately winning basketball. It can be a phase of your offense, but the Pistons are not working the ball around, shifting it from one side of the court to the other, making the defense move. I swear, watching these games, the Pistons have to be the easiest team in the league to defend. There's never a possession with more than about 3 passes. When Ish is out there, Ish Smith, and again, we could go on and on about the struggles of Ish Smith this year, just kind of dribbles around forever. Another guy, he's making his guy work, and there's nothing wrong with that, but like 3 times a quarter, he'll dribble around and make his guy work. But the other guys on the team playing defense against the Pistons aren't working. They're resting and watching. So, I mean, another thing that I've noticed is we've looked at the assist numbers for both these guys. Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin, I don't know that they are great passers. I don't know that they aren't great passers. We just haven't seen evidence of either in this Detroit lineup, or they haven't shown it. For big men, they're good at getting assists. There's big numbers there sometimes for both of them. Dre's good at finding cutters, and Blake can occasionally draw some double teams, but that's not the whole key of being a good passer, and I think we saw that with Jokic in Denver today. Pistons, when they... the Pistons pass when their individual or their two-man play didn't work, and then they start something else over. Like, okay, well, that didn't work, now let's start. It's not a cohesive offensive unit like we've seen from teams like Utah and Denver these last couple days. Now, in fairness, these are two of the, you know, hotter teams in the NBA competing for a playoff spot in the Western Conference, but that's the level that you need to be at if you need to get over the hump and get into the playoffs like the Pistons have been trying to do for the last couple weeks, albeit amazingly unsuccessfully. But those are teams that are great at ball movement at times, and that starts with guys like Jokic at Denver. You can get him the ball, Jokic, at any time in the shot clock. He can bring the ball up the court too. He will help you, whether by doing it himself or getting the ball into a part of the court where the next action will come. Blake Griffin can bring the ball up the court, but then it's going to result in a slow transition into his offense, which is going to be, again, plotting, and it will result into baskets occasionally, and it's fairly efficient sometimes, but it's not things that are ultimately making the other team work and getting more guys involved other than the two guys involved in the two-man game or whatever it is. And teams like Denver and Utah obviously make a concerted team effort of sharing the ball and making the other team work. And it's ultimately more fun when you're doing that, and it helps the culture. And that's the other transitions into the other thing that I've noticed about this team these last couple games. It's hard to watch the Pistons because it's probably harder even still to be on this team right now. They seem like pretty solid guys, citizens-wise. We don't know enough about Blake Griffin. I have my thoughts on that. But it seems like they're in a funk right now, obviously, with how poorly they're playing. But they don't look like they're enjoying playing basketball at all. That has a lot to do with Stan Van Gundy at all. It starts with Blake Griffin as well. I didn't know he was this bad defensively, but I also didn't know about the pure joylessness that he plays the game with. It's just completely dreadful to watch him dreading playing basketball, it seems like. And again, I don't see any evidence of good coaching out there for the Pistons. I don't, you don't really hear a lot of people around the team talk about the contributions of the assistant coaches, and I think that falls on Stan Van Gundy as well, to not have guys that are, you look at Doc Rivers in Boston had Tom Thibodeau as his defensive coordinator, and there's always talk about that, or maybe even a guy that just fires up the team a little bit from his assistant coaching level. You kind of see the statues next to Stan Van Gundy sitting there, not really doing anything during games, and not really being given much credit for anything positive that's going on off the court as well. The season is over, and I don't know, why aren't they more trying more things? Why don't we see Dwight Bikes out there more with the starters? I mean, when Andre Drummond was on the court while Dwight Bikes was scoring 17 of his 22 there in the second half, maybe things like, can Luke Kennard and Blake Griffin work well together for next year? Get those two guys on the court together so you can think about maybe Kennard being a starter sooner rather than later. I don't know if that's something that's going to happen next season or not, but you got Blake and Kennard seemingly on this team together for the next few years. Why don't we see if those guys can contribute something out there? Get freaking Henry Ellenson out there. And I know that you guys have talked about this, listeners, a little bit too. It's not like I'm coming up with something new here, but there's no reason why Henry Ellenson can't get five meaningful non-blowout minutes each half of every game right now, and certainly as the season goes on. When they're mathematically eliminated, I'm sure we're going to see Henry Ellenson get 25 minutes, 30 minutes a game. He'll get main minutes when they're mathematically eliminated and they're going up against teams tanking or teams that have already clinched playoff spots. But I'm talking about right now, 2 months ago. Why aren't we seeing Henry Ellenson at all? I mean, is he just that bad? And if so, again, that falls on Stan Van Gundy as well. Another DNP for Ellenson, despite the fact that they were down by almost 30 points in the third quarter. And it's a Pistons team that obviously needed a second half spark, obviously needed something to jolt them in this this game and this season, really. A couple other notes. I mentioned Luke Kennard, and I would like to see him on the court, 24 plus minutes the rest of the way. He is so far away from being a passable defensive player right now. But you got to let him play through it. A lot of it is physicality. He's trying. He's trying out there, but towards the end of the shot clock, he followed a couple of jump shooters while Denver was taking control of the game there. Just not pretty for Kennard. And Dwight Bikes, how about the way he played? Again, he's been injured a little bit lately, so there's been reasons why he hasn't been getting minutes, but continue to put him out there. Unfortunately, the Pistons have Langston Galloway sucking up a lot of the salary cap for the next 2 years. So, and I don't even say that as if Langston's a bad player, but obviously he hasn't been given enough of a chance to show that he's good by the same guy who signed him for these astonishing numbers. But, man, and we talked to Aaron Johnson about Stanley Johnson. We'll have that interview a little bit later. Aaron had an article about Stanley. And I don't know if Aaron Johnson and Stanley Johnson are related, by the way. Maybe I'll have to check on that at some point. Maybe Aaron's writing about his cousin Stanley. I doubt it. I happen to think that that's not the case. But coming off the recent injury, Stanley, kind of more of the old, might as well have not played for most of the game for this one. He did have some defensive moments during the Pistons' comeback and was on the court for the Pistons' comeback, so obviously a little bit of credit there, but just not. I mean, we've seen flashes of the good Stanley Johnson, especially these the past third of the season while the Pistons have been really struggling. He's been playing pretty well, but just a frustrating look at Stanley Johnson on Thursday night against Denver. And then the Pistons continue this six-game road trip, which is kind of showing all the flaws of the team right now. Portland on Saturday, it doesn't get any easier there. A tough trip up to the Pacific Northwest against another team that's desperate for the playoffs. They're up a little bit higher position than Denver and Utah, near the third and fourth slot up there, vying for home court in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs. Doesn't get any easier, certainly, and the Pistons will be heavy underdogs on Saturday. You know, they needed to get out here and win one of these Utah or Denver games, and if they had any chance. The loss season continues, though, and like I said, we're at and like we said yesterday's podcast, the Milwaukee and Miami lost games to tanking teams. The door was open to maybe try to slide that door a little bit more open, but obviously that isn't in the cards for this team this season. But like I said, we'll have our interview with Aaron Johnson of the Palace of Pistons, Warren De La Salle broadcaster as well after this. But if your company wants to reach men 18 and 44 between those ages, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. If you know anything about men in that spot, especially from the Detroit area, they're loyal. They want to help out people who help out the things that they enjoy, and hopefully, and I know that one of those things is Locked On Pistons because you're listening to it right now. But our rates are reasonable here on Locked On Pistons, and if you want to find out more and reach that demographic, email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com.
Yes, sir!
And we are now being joined by one of the youngest members of the Pistons online community, and that's Aaron Johnson, the founder and one of the writers for Palace of Pistons. Aaron, thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Always a pleasure, and thanks for having me on.
All right, cool. So, Palace of Pistons, how did you guys start the blog, and how did it all come about for you?
Well, I'd actually been a part of the Detroit Pistons blog for about a year, maybe two, and some things just kind of fell through there. And I didn't want to stop writing about the Detroit Pistons. They've been my team since I was a little kid. I've grown up in Michigan my entire life, so with my love of basketball, they just naturally were the team that I fell in love with. And I knew a couple of guys that were writing at that website and was able to get them to come along with me, and we created it. And with the help of Def Pen and Def Pen Hoops, an NBA website, an entertainment website, they partnered with us and really helped us get going, just working on our website and, getting our stuff out there. And we've just been able to be a part of the Pistons community ever since. And it's been really cool. It's been a real blessing to be able to do this at my age. I know it's something that a lot of kids my age are not able to do and, don't do it. But getting into Palace of Pistons, I decided that I wanted to keep doing what I love doing. So I knew how to do it. I knew I could make a website, and I knew that if I was able to find the right guys, I'd be able to build a team that, all share the same passion that I do for the Detroit Pistons. And, here we are about 2 years in, and it's been a blast.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And Aaron, I'm a dinosaur, so I was back in the days when you didn't have a blog in high school covering a pro team, and you went to college and studied journalism. I went to Central Michigan. Now you're a senior at De La Salle High School. Do you have your plans for next year set up? Will you go study journalism somewhere, or do you have kind of other plans for what you want to do with this?
Right now, I'm looking at a couple different options. You mentioned Central Michigan. That's a school that I am very interested in, and I visited them a few weeks ago, and I'm looking to going into their journalism program. I know a couple people up there that work in their broadcasting and then their journalism program as well, and it looks like it's a would be something great to be a part of, and another way to enhance my journalism abilities. It's something that I'm definitely keeping on my mind. My two brothers attend Medina University. That's in Livonia, Michigan, and they do some sports broadcasting there, and I also do it at my high school, so it's a passion of mine. So I'm also looking at Medina as a possibility as well, and I would pretty much say those are the two colleges that I'm focused in on right now as I try to make a decision.
Now, something that you guys are doing a little bit different on the blog that maybe some of the other guys aren't catching right now is coverage of the G League team, the Grand Rapids Drive. You got a guy on the games as a credentialed media member. Tell me about how that all came about and what you guys hope to do with some of that coverage.
Well, it's really cool. I had introduced myself to the Grand Rapids Drive public relations lady about a year ago through email, and I requested to interview their head coach at the time, which was Rex Walters, who's now an assistant on the Detroit Pistons coaching staff. So I was able to work that out, and you know, she just said to stay in contact with, you know, any questions or media requests, and I've done that. You know, haven't done a lot of coverage myself of interviewing players, but I've kind of stuck with the G League because I really like what it is. I like what it can bring to the NBA as it's, you know, minor league system of the NBA, comparing it to Major League Baseball. But just through staying in contact with her and doing my best to cover the drive when applicable, I found it to be really fun. And, you know, I find myself rooting for some of the guys down there who are trying to take that next step in their professional career, just like Jordan Crawford, who was on the G League team for Detroit last year, the Grand Rapids Drive, and was up with the Pelicans. He got called up, and just to see those guys succeed. And, you know, now as our website grows and what we are doing grows and people start to take notice of it, to get that opportunity to be a credentialed website with the Grand Rapids Drive, it's a great opportunity for us to grow and for us to continue to become a better website and a more known website. And our guy down there, Joe Truck, actually he just joined Pals of Pistons just a few months ago, and he's done some really great work, and he's based in Grand Rapids, so it's a hand-in-glove fit for him. And as to what we're going to be doing with the drive, it's kind of up in the air right now, as we just went to our first game earlier this week on Monday, I believe it was. I know that they were on a pretty long road stretch and then had the All-Star break before we could get out to a game prior to the break. So now that we're able to get to some home games that they have before the season ends, it's just been a great opportunity, and hopefully we're able to make, you know, do some great coverage with players, talk to players as they try to work their way into the NBA, and provide a different aspect of coverage to the Detroit Pistons in the G League, which is something that I think is going to become a major factor in the NBA throughout the upcoming years.
Yeah, it's pretty unique that you guys are down there doing it. I'm actually going to be at the game on Tuesday here in Chicago as the drive hit the road. They're going to get a little bit of a playoff push going, so I'm excited to see that, my first G League game in person. So that should be a good one as well. And on the site, you wrote about Stanley Johnson most recently. Tell me about what you think about the young Pistons forward as he's trying to build on his impressive play lately.
Well, obviously, the struggles have been well known for Stanley Johnson. He had a pretty good rookie season with Detroit. Then his name just kind of became known in the playoffs that year when he kind of called out LeBron James, saying he wasn't afraid of him. And then the sophomore season came for him, and he just really struggled right off the bat. Never really came to form. The shot wasn't falling. And just didn't really have an offensive game, which put him in the doghouse of the Detroit Pistons roster this year. Began the season as a starting small forward. He struggled. Then he got injured, and he kind of played through injuries and continued to struggle. But he sat out a few more games, and when he came back, when he was 100% healthy, we really started to see the guy that Stan Van Gundy drafted a few years ago. He is a lightning bolt in transition, attacking the rim. It's so hard to stop him because of his frame at 6'7 and 245 pounds. He's just got so much muscle on him that when he attacks the basket, you're either going to have to follow him or you're just not going to be able to stop him because he's so strong and he can get right through you. Comparable to LeBron James in that sense. Obviously, I'm not going to say Stanley Johnson is LeBron James, but I'm saying the aspect of that game for both those players is very similar. And the three ball, the shooting for Stanley Johnson is still a struggle. We've actually seen that recently, and as he's had a couple bad games as he's been dealing with injuries. But I still see a lot of upside in him as the small forward of the future for the Detroit Pistons. He is already an elite defender with the way he can get up in his opponent. He can guard the point guard all the way to the power forward. We've seen him do that throughout the season. He's guarded the likes of Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, LeBron James, Kristaps Porzingis. The list goes on and on for him. You know, that's something that is his calling card, and he does a really good job of doing that offensively. And I wrote about this in my article on TalisofPistons.com. This is a really big offseason coming up for him. We really need to see him take that next step as an offensive player, specifically shooting the long ball. In years past with the Detroit Pistons, we've seen guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Tobias Harris become better three-point shooters. And, I mean, Tobias Harris, when he was with the Orlando Magic, was not a good three-point shooter at all. But in his second year with the Pistons, and you know, he was one of the best three-point shooters in the league. And in his second full year, that is, not last season, but this year before he got traded, he was one of the best three-point shooters in the league. So something's in Detroit's water where they can kind of develop shooters out of some of those guys that they get. We've seen that with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as well. Now he's, you know, a near 40% shooter with the Los Angeles Lakers from the three-point line. So developing that long ball for Stanley Johnson will really help to unlock his offensive game and round that game out. So that's something that is big for Johnson, and I think there's still a lot of potential there for him to be a very good player.
The article is titled "Stanley Johnson is Figuring It Out with the Pistons," and you can check it out at palaceofpistons.com. Aaron Johnson, follow him on Twitter as well at AJohnsonNBA. Aaron, while I got you here, some other big basketball being played in your backyard too, as the De La Salle Pilots are now in the state quarterfinals, Class A, I believe Tuesday against the UD Jesuits in the quarterfinals coming up. And I'm a high school basketball guy, so tell me about the Pilots. Do they got a chance to win a state championship this year?
Well, I'll tell you what, I was at the game yesterday. I broadcasted it for my high school where they played Dakota at Dakota. Those two teams, they don't meet a lot in the big sports, football, or basketball, but it's still a rivalry because De La Salle is, you know, a private school and Dakota's a public school, and there's just that as soon as they match up, that's a rivalry because of what the two schools are. So the atmosphere inside Dakota High School was absolutely insane, and De La Salle was able to come away with a big win. There's some really good young players on that team. Justin Fisher, who's going to be playing Division II basketball, is a really good point guard. He can throw down at 6'3", is a really good passer. There's Luke Fromm, who's going to be the quarterback at Wayne State. He led the De La Salle football team to a state championship this year in Division II, who can do so many things on the basketball court, specifically on the offensive end. And, you know, this is a De La Salle team that's kind of starting to find its form. And now they play UAD, who they've already seen three times this season. They've played them close two times and ended up losing those games, and then they did get blown out by them. That was the first time that they met in the season where they got blown out. But the mantra that these guys are walking around with at school is, it's not going to happen a fourth time. The fourth time is going to be different. And I'm really excited for this game because the talent is there for De La Salle. This is a team that can compete with the powerhouse that is U of D Jesuit, and a Tuesday should be an absolute bloodbath between these two teams.
So Warren De La Salle and U of D Jesuit on Tuesday, and the winner gets Foster Lawyer and Clarkston possibly in the semifinals. They're going to play Flint Carmen Ainsworth. Before that, the other half of the bracket, East Lansing and Holland West Ottawa, and then Belleville and Nova. I'm assuming Clarkston's the favorite. Is that the case? I mean, those guys are always pretty much the team, one of the teams to beat across the state. Is that maybe true this year too?
Yeah, it for sure is. Even with Thomas Kithia ruled ineligible for Clarkston, Foster Lawyer, a Michigan State commit, definitely a top player in the state, maybe the best player in the state of Michigan. So Clarkson's a well-oiled machine. You know, they got a great coach, and that roster is very good right behind Foster Lawyer. That's the talk. You know, if whoever wins this game on Tuesday between De La Salle and UD Jesuit, they're expecting to see Clarkston, who will definitely be the toughest challenge that either of these two teams will face.
Aaron, you mentioned Thomas Kithier. While I got you on the line here, I want to ask you about that. I was covering a similar situation that he had when I was down in Springfield, Missouri, and we had a kid transfer that was ruled ineligible. Basically, the exact same situation, except that he moved across the state back home to Springfield, Missouri, from the St. Louis area. Thomas Kithier, for those who are listening who are probably not familiar with this, Macomb, Dakota player, a standout basketball player, committed to Michigan State as well. He transferred to Clarkson and there was the whole thing where Macomb, Dakota has the option of going after this transfer and saying it was for athletic reasons, and they did that. And part of the Michigan High School Athletic Association bylaws say that you can't transfer for athletic reasons. And it was just a court case that went back and forth. And long story short, Thomas Kithier, a real good basketball player, ended up losing his senior year, and he's at Clarkson, not able to play right now. As a high school student who's involved with some of these athletics and can maybe see it from the local level, as like you said, Dakota's kind of a rival school of De La Salle. What do you think about that kind of on the ground floor there?
You know, I think that the rule itself has some validity, and the usual case with transfers, at least from what I have dealt with in basketball, has been that they have to sit out the first half of the season up until Martin Luther King Day, which is when I believe the second semester officially starts for the season, and then they're eligible to play the rest of the year out. With this case, Kithier has not been allowed to play throughout the entire season, and it's a rule that I don't think is enforced fully, which therefore I don't think it should be enforced on just Thomas Kithier because of his name and because of what he's going to be doing at college at Michigan State, where he's committed to play. And just because Clarkson is already a powerhouse, I don't think that they should have ruled him out. And that's coming from a guy that goes to a school that could be playing him in a few games. So I was really against the ruling. I thought it was unfair to him. If they were going to enforce that rule on him, they need to enforce it on every kid transferring that is going to be playing a sport at the high school level. So I was disappointed, and I don't know the full rule that made him ineligible for the entire season. I'm not sure how it goes from a half a season to an entire season or whatever the case may be. But I don't think it's fair. I think that he should have been allowed to play with the start of the second semester, and I'm disappointed in the ruling because that's, first off, it's a kid, and he's a developing basketball player, and you're stopping him from allowing him to grow as a basketball player. And obviously he wants to compete and he wants to win. And Clarkson was going to help him get that opportunity, and to stop him from being able to do that, it's just disappointing.
Aaron, I'm with you. I don't see why. What's in it for the adults at Macomb, Dakota, who put up the fight to make sure that a kid doesn't play high school basketball on the team that he wants to play for? I don't really quite understand why that is so important to these people that they need to stop a kid from playing high school basketball in his senior year. But I hope they're really happy with how this whole thing turned out there at Macomb, Dakota. As I look back on this situation that I covered in Missouri, I still don't understand what the people who put up the fight against the kid playing a high school sport for the team he wants to play for and why that's such a big deal to them. I will never understand that. But Aaron, thanks again for taking the time. PalaceOfPistons.com, A. Johnson NBA on Twitter. It's a Def Pen blog. You guys are doing great work. Keep it up, and let's do this again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks again to Aaron Johnson for joining us from PalaceOfPistons.com. And Aaron, if you're listening, definitely do go to Central Michigan. Don't mess around with Medina. I'm sure there's nothing wrong with Medina University, and maybe go there as well if you really want to stay close to home. But I recommend heading up to Mount Pleasant, becoming a Chippewa, writing for CM Life, doing all that good stuff up there in Mount Pleasant. But we're going to be talking Monday on the podcast about the Saturday game against the Portland Trailblazers, Dame Lillard, CJ McCollum, and the Hungry Blazers. I'm sure the Pistons will probably get throttled in that one as well. And then look ahead to the rest of the 6-game road trip, which I have a feeling will turn into a long road trip for Pistons players and fans as it continues here next week. But go ahead and give us a follow on the Lockdown NBA Network Twitter feed at Lockdown NBA Net. And on Facebook, give us a like at Lockdown Pistons-Matt Shook. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you all again soon.